Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:14 p.m. in the Pacific Summer Time. Today is May 5th. I thought we'd kick off today with the CRB Raw Industrial Commodities Index. It's a spot index, so it does tend to be a little more volatile, but there's a couple of things that I thought are particularly relevant. The first is that this entire range that's been transpiring since the peak back in 2008 has been above the long range that took effect from the end of the 1970s all the way through until the beginning of the 2000s. So I think that's an important point, that we have seen a step change in the marginal cost of production. And that's something that we see repeated on a number of occasions over decades. Any kind of commodity complex where we have lots and lots of back history, we can see these long step changes. So one thing that's, I think, relevant to highlight is when we look at these long-term charts of the oil price, and this one is updated monthly, well, we can see that if we go all the way back to the early 1900s, well, then we have a range and a breakout and a long range and a breakout and a long range and again another breakout and then an equally long range. So ranges are explosions waiting to happen, but some of these ranges can last for what must feel like an interminably long time. Now if we go back and think about the CRB spot index, I think there's another point that's rather relevant, and it's that the commodity prices bottomed about a month after 9/11. They bottomed about a month after the crash in 2008, and they bottomed about a month after the peak in the number of infections during the pandemic. And after each one of those lows, and arguably we'd had these big declines heading into them, then we saw a very substantial run-up in commodity prices. So it might be tempting to think that the move that we've had in commodities is a big one already, and it is, and that's particularly true when we look at things like lumber prices. But the reality is that the move we've seen in the oil price is still reasonably well contained. The price was a little bit softer in here today. It's right at the upper side of this range that's been forming for the last couple of months. We might yet see some additional consolidation here. It's still a broad medium-term bull market overall. I'm not looking at oil as being the leader in this particular cycle. I think that mantle will fall on copper. Copper prices were also a little softer in here today, but they've been up in a really very spectacular manner. It's really not beyond the bounds of possibility at all that we see some consolidation in the region of that peak from back in 2011. We've also seen these really impressive moves in things like soybeans and corn, and that's obviously in response to increasing demand and then also to these supply chain disruptions that have been a feature of the pandemic. There's an additional point, of course, that the cost of moving commodities around the world is also trending higher. So the Baltic Dry Index gapped higher again yesterday. It's continuing to extend its breakout from this very long range. And it's been a while since I looked at this, so it hasn't updated the chart. When we think about what happened the last time it broke above 2,000, well, it wasn't long before it was at 4,000. And now the bigger question has to start to be asked about just what effect has the IMO 2020 suite of regulations had on the global shipping sector. It was reasonable to anticipate that that breakout at the end of 2019 would have had legs because of the additional costs that were going to be imposed upon ship operators. It was going to result in a large number of ships being taken offline. Then, of course, we had the pandemic and demand fell off a cliff. So that sort of blunted the impact on the global economy of this lack of new ships and lack of old ships that were still serviceable. But now we're starting to see that come back in spades. So there's obviously a problem here that there simply are not enough ships. And on top of that, a lot of the containers are in the USA. They haven't been shipped back to Asia to get filled up again. So that's an additional problem that the ability of, I think what I find interesting is that there was a great deal of news coverage for the blocking of the Suez Canal. Much less has been made of the blocking of Los Angeles port because of union actions. And having spoken to a number of people who are really very active in importing through the Los Angeles port, all I hear are complaints about unions where they just refuse to have their workers tested. And when one person is diagnosed with COVID on the shift, then the entire shift is sent home. So that's obviously not conducive to productivity growth of containers through the port. So it does look like we're going to see additional premia put on the price of shipping things around the world. And then when we look at the tanker fleet, then the price has not popped on the upside in the same manner. But we have had a number of occasions where it has been much more volatile than the Baltic Dry Index. But it is now at least pausing here in the region of the trend mean. I think one of the primary reasons to be more bullish about the outlook for commodities overall is not to concentrate on the leaders, but to look at some of the laggards. Coffee, for example, has got clear base formation completion characteristics. It's got this beautiful rounding characteristic, and that base has been going on now for nearly 5 years. Wheat has an almost identical suite of chart characteristics, and it is consolidating above the recent peaks around 700. Sugar prices also have this rounding characteristic and first step above the base characteristics and pushing on to new highs in here today. So we certainly have evidence of increasing demand for commodities overall. Then we can think about the performance of the industrial resources. Obviously, everyone is concentrating on this spectacular advance in copper, but it's worth just simply looking at some of the other commodities as well. So we also have zinc prices, which are continuing to firm from the region of the trend mean and pushing on to new recovery highs. Tin prices have also been really quite steady. And I think when we just look at the broad suite of commodities, we are presented with large numbers that continue to push on the upside. Even cocoa, which has been a bit of a laggard overall, it's confined to this extraordinarily volatile 3-year range and firming from the lower side. And even within that range, there's a broad upward bias. So even here, there's the potential that we're going to see additional upside over the medium term. What that is suggesting is that even though there are a couple that are in fact pushing lower, like orange juice, the broad swell of interest in the commodity complex is for higher prices. We're also starting to see that companies are engaging in shrinkflation, so they are reducing the size of the products they sell in order to pass on higher input costs. And that was very much a feature of the consumer staples market back in the 2000s, and that playbook is certainly being revisited, which is contributing to the relative strength of the dividend aristocrats and the broad consumer discretionary and consumer staples sectors. When we think about inflation, well, inflationary pressures are likely to rise simply by virtue of the fact that we are seeing the price of everything advancing, the perception that inflationary pressures are going to rise, and then the upswing in commodity prices as a result of the policy initiatives introduced after a shock to the economy, exactly like we had after 9/11, the credit crisis, and now the pandemic. So it's logical to think that we will have some form of inflationary bias. But at the other side of that argument, in order to think about the longer term perspective, then we have to conclude that there is going to be a complete regime change, that we are moving into a much more aggressive period of fiscal spending, and that this is no longer short term in nature, and that these forms of transfers to populations are going to continue, that there will be rafts of new taxes, that there will be exchange controls and limitations on international growth, and those are the kinds of factors that could significantly contribute to inflationary pressures. So we're certainly not there yet, and it's quite likely that what we're seeing at the moment are shorter term inflationary pressures that have the likelihood to eventually coalesce around longer term inflationary pressures. But it's still a bet as to when that is going to occur and if it's going to occur, and that's what makes a market. And I think that is part of the reason why we continue to see some demand for treasury bonds. So bonds continue to pop here on the upside, coming back to test the upper side of this little range. This to me looks like a type 2 bottom, and we have not yet seen the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. I've been positioned for a reversion to the mean, and so far it's been a little slow in coming good, but I do think that it's quite likely we're going to see a reversion back towards the mean. And if bond prices are continuing to rally, that's beneficial for gold since they've been trading in lockstep. I think the important point though is that $1,800 is now the big level for gold. It's right in the region of the exponential moving average. I tend to favor exponential averages just simply because they give more weight to the most recent data, and I do believe that is the correct way of looking at markets. We've also seen that there's been this rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs, and until that is broken, then it will be difficult to conclude that we've seen anything other than short-term steadying. I personally think, rather believe that we're not all that far away from a significant low in gold, but until we actually have evidence, it will be difficult to argue the point. The one thing, though, is that gold does tend to disappoint, and it disappoints the bears when it breaks out, disappoints the bulls when it pulls back. It's the kind of thing that can make you feel old. And the reality is that it is volatile and best bought following reactions. So there is the potential that we may get a very short, sharp reaction. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility. We certainly saw something like that, for example, in 2016. But the other question here is whether we're if bond prices continue to push higher, they should drag gold higher too. Gold will do better if investors believe that the government is serious, and governments everywhere are serious about printing their way out of trouble. There's no reason to conclude that they're not going to do that, but until we see that they are willing to tolerate higher inflation for months in a row, then our central banks are willing to do that, then investors won't truly be convinced. But one thing we're definitely seeing is that some of the wind is coming out of the IPO sector. And the IPO ETF had steadied in the region of the trend mean yesterday and then failed to bounce in here today. That's despite the fact that when we think about the performance on Wall Street, the Dow and the S&P were able to reverse at least part of the declines they put in yesterday, but the Nasdaq remains under pressure. And the Nasdaq index is obviously dominated by the mega caps. The one thing that I think is relevant is when we look about at companies like Amazon, and Jeff Bezos has had a lot of personal trouble over the course of the last 2 years, and now he's no longer going to lead the company. So, considering his talent at leadership and his position as the CEO of a company that grew from nowhere to be one of the largest in the world, his exit isn't going to go unnoticed by investors, and the share has been down for 4 days in a row, and it's looking like a failed upside break. And if it's a failed upside break, well, then the chances are it's going to come back down and test the 3,000 level. And when it gets down below the 200-day moving average, well, then it does raise the potential that we're looking at more than a short-term pullback. And when we think about companies like Amazon, even after a significant contraction in its valuation, it's still on an estimated PE of 60. And when we then think about its price to sales, it's not as aggressive as some of the other companies in the world, but it's still at 4. That's also aggressive. Then, of course, we have the point that Bill Gates has come back into. He's been in and out of Microsoft's board for a while, and that share is also now coming back, and he's also going through some big personal changes as well. I do think that when we think about the performance of the companies that really prosper because they've got this extraordinary personality at their helm, well, the Founders Index Fund generally overweights companies that have got these big personalities on board, and not least because they believe that companies where the founder is still in charge tend to do well. Well, we're looking at a couple of the biggest companies in the world where the founders are going through some really rather extraordinary personal issues. So this is obviously a big question about when you get up towards valuations that approximate $1 trillion, then the quantity of money that we're talking about is extraordinary. And Bitcoin looks like it has put in a lower rally high. Now, the pace of the decline from that peak in April is still relatively modest, and it is still holding the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it is still above the 200-day moving average. But one would have to think that $600 is an awfully big number for Tesla, and certainly the momentum has come out of this trade. What this suggests to me, at least, is that there is significant room for a very large rotation out of the most highly valued technology companies who got this huge growth spurt as a result of the pandemic, and into the beneficiaries of the kind of spending programs that are coming good as a result of the pandemic. And that certainly favors commodities and real assets over technology, where the promise of future earnings is very dependent on continued access to infinite liquidity. We're certainly starting to see some of the bullish sentiment coming back for Peloton, considering it is wide open to lawsuits as a result of killing people with its exercise equipment. Zoom Media has also broken down here, and it was at a new reaction low in here today. It's another company that doesn't provide a particularly good service and benefited enormously from schools adopting its programs. So if they're all open again in September, they won't be renewing their subscriptions. And when we then think about all of the other companies that got one-shot hits from their ability to provide services to people that really needed them during the pandemic and probably don't need them without it. Well, the biotech sector is obviously in that category, and the promise of availability of brand new types of products coming from biotech is still very much easily made. But it is coming back in the region of the trend mean, and it will have to bounce rather soon if this trend is to remain consistent overall. Then we can think about how things are going in places like India. The Nifty index was steadier in here today. There are some shenanigans going on right now with the state-owned banks being told to hold on to their dollars and not to be active in the markets. Well, the Bombay Banks Index has at least steadied here, and it has held this break of this short-term downtrend from the February peak. So it does look like banks are starting to move back onto the front foot. Eventually, the bad loans being held by the state-owned banks will have to be addressed. India has been more than willing to enforce the liquidization of the private sector banks and forcing them to adapt to their bad loans problem. But the same problem is existing in the state-owned banks, and there is no political appetite for addressing those problems. So the State Bank of India is right now in the region of the upper side of this range that's been forming for more than a decade, and it's beginning to steady. So there is certainly the potential that India is going to be a significant beneficiary from the continued rising geopolitical tensions with China. It's being viewed as the front line in the rising tide of attempting to combat China's increasingly ambitious global geopolitical program. And that pretty much means that the rest of the world can't afford for India to fail, and therefore it won't be allowed to. And it'll be provided with whatever assistance it is that it requires. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.